Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
The Axe of the Blood God.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey. Briefly in between international trips, I just got back from Japan, and I'm heading to Scotland next week. But before that, I'm going to record a podcast with everybody's favorite Bob Mackie.
Hey everybody, I'll soon be in the exotic location of Youngstown, Ohio, the worst place on earth. Or at least the worst place in America. I think Chernobyl might be worse.
You keep going back there on purpose, Bob.
I rarely go back there, and I mean, my family lives there, so I'm obligated to see them occasionally. But if you're in town, and you probably won't be, you can find me there, one of three people walking around downtown.
The greatest thing I saw was you doing like the photographic comparisons between Fallout 4 and Youngstown, Ohio.
Oh yeah, it's pretty illuminating. It's uncanny how similar. I bet Bethesda went to Youngstown to study it. Like, how does a real civilization fall apart? Let's go to Youngstown.
Hey, Ohio's like having a really good month. I mean, they're the city of champions now, or like Cleveland is anyway.
Cleveland is. I bet some of that residual success vibes are hitting Youngstown.
You're kind of soaking it up. Wow, like this is the most relevant that Ohio's been since the last presidential election or something.
Yeah, every 4 years, people have to pretend to care about it. If you're in Ohio, I still love you, but I bet no one listening is from Youngstown. And if you are, you realize why I'm making fun of it. So I think we're all good.
Anyway, no Nadia Oxford this week. She'll be back next week, I presume, because, well, Bob will be handling the podcast. So I'll let him decide what the topic will be next week. But so this week we're going to be talking about Pokemon Go, and we're going to be talking about Monster Hunter Generations. I was just in Japan. Bob, did you know that there's a Dissidia arcade game?
Well, you know what? There's like a Left 4 Dead arcade game in Japan, so nothing is off limits for them.
Did you ever play Dissidia?
I wasn't really interested in a fighting game on the PSP, so I never played it. I liked how much it was about fan service, though.
Yeah, right. I mean, it had RPG-ish type elements. It had leveling up and stuff. And an overworld.
I guess that counts.
I guess that does count.
But there's an arcade game?
Yeah, there is totally an arcade game.
Huh.
And
does it look better than a PSP game?
Yes, it does look considerably better than a PSP game. Wow. And it plays pretty similarly to the PSP game as well. Slightly bigger arenas than before, and it's not one-on-one, it's like 3-on-3, which I think the team-based format actually works pretty well for it. But it's always been a little weird because, like, in most fighting games, right, you run up to somebody and you hack and slash until their life bar runs out and they fall over. In Dissidia, it's always been like, you do a certain amount of damage until they break, and then you can do a lot of damage and presumably maybe take them out, and you do a bunch of special moves and everything. It's not the most intuitive thing in the world, which is weird for a game that's kind of supposed to be a casual fan servicey game. But it's, like I said, it's very similar to the PSP game. Supposedly it's getting ported to home consoles, so I wouldn't be shocked if it eventually came out here.
Really?
Yeah.
It's getting ported to home consoles.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I had no idea.
That's the word on the street, so. But nobody seemed to be playing it in Japan. Everybody was playing the arcade game where a bunch of girls are battleships.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wait. Are they World War II battleships? Or,
yes.
Okay, I thought
Kantai Collection is what it's called.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, everybody's playing these CCG arcade games where you like plug in X amount of money and it gives you a deck of cards. Physical DLC, as they call it.
I've seen those in arcades, not in Japan, but in California, and they look like the most intimidating thing in the universe. Like, do you have to bring your own physical supplies to the arcade machine to play it?
Well, like they have machines to dispense the cards.
Okay.
So you can get like you can get a pack of cards and then like you scan them in and you have a card that will save your progress and you can save it onto your mobile phone and stuff. It's actually pretty cool, but it's kind of also a way to get them to nickel and dime you and also get them to get you to keep coming back. So it's a little bit of a ripoff, but yeah, it's kind of how arcades are staying alive over there. So I guess I can't complain too much because it could be like here.
Yeah.
Completely non-existent.
There's no option here.
As for what's going on right here, Pokemon Go, which I was trying to play over in Japan and did not work. It was just empty grids for as far as the eye could see. But I finally got back on Tuesday and got to see what all the fuss was about for myself. And yeah, I gotta say, the craze is pretty legit. Like, everybody seems to be playing this game, Pokemon Go.
Yes.
Discovering what I knew. Everybody
but me.
Discovering what I knew 20 years ago, that Pokemon is good.
Yeah.
But yes, you're not into it, though.
Not really. I mean, I don't want to be a hater because this is not a product made for Bob Mackey.
Too late, Bob. You're already a hater.
What's that?
You're already a hater.
I'm trying not to be. But, I mean, it's not made for me. Like, I don't have a car because I live in the Bay Area. I don't need a car. And I walk between 3 to 4 miles every day just to get exercise. And there are times in my life where I'm like, hey, I don't want to be playing a video game right now. I just want to, you know, listen to a podcast, take in the nice scenery, just chill out. And like my walks are my time away from games. And I like to have a little reading time too. So this does not fit into my life the way it's fitting into other people's life. And I think it's great that I used to live in the Midwest where you only got out of your car to walk to a store from the parking lot. And that's the only time you'd ever be walking. So the fact that people are getting exercise in these places that are very car friendly is great, but it's not for me. So that's the kindest thing I can say about it. But I like the fact that Pokemon is relevant. And I especially like the fact that Nintendo is now relevant again. I feel like they have the highest highs and the lowest lows. We go from Wii U, one of the most disappointing consoles in terms of sales, to one of the best, highest played games of all time that everyone is talking about. You can't leave your home without seeing someone talking about Pokemon Go, playing it, or like meeting in groups together. It's pretty astounding.
Yeah,
I love the Wii U, by the way, just in case anyone wants to complain. I really like the Wii U.
I can't think of a gaming craze that has been this, like, that has cut across this many demographics since maybe the original Pokemon. And even then, it's like, this is far bigger. It feels like, just because you've got people of every single age and every single type, from the most casual of gamers to your parents to hardcore fans, like, everybody's playing this thing. And granted, it's only been a week, but and for all we know, within a month, like, it will cool off, like, considerably. And I wouldn't even be surprised if it cooled off a lot in the next month or so, just because the novelty will start to wear off a little bit, and people will kind of get on with their lives, and, like, the casual fans will peel off. I think what will really determine whether or not it manages to have any staying power is whether the kind of the battles prove to be compelling. Like, that's like how a long-term community kind of like coalesces. Right now, it's just a fad, I think.
Yeah, I do want to see how people react once the novelty has worn off, because even when I wasn't playing it, I was being a little cranky, like, oh, wow, there's a Pokemon superimposed over something in real life that is still entertaining, but not really. I think those pictures are starting to go away now, too. So I think it'll have longer legs than Matomo, but I can't really predict. I can't do the Michael Pachter flip a coin and get $1 million for my prediction. So I can't tell you how it's going to be in the next month or two, but I think the Pokemon brand is strong, and there's a lot of nostalgia across multiple generations. And it's been funny to see people who are maybe a little too old for the original Pokemon, or maybe a little too old for video games being played by adults. And I see a lot of people I follow on Twitter, like comedians and celebrities, are acting like, an adult is playing a video game? What the hell is this? Like, they're completely baffled by the fact that video games are also for adults. And I think it just shows that Pokemon has been around long enough that so many generations have played it by now.
Yeah, when I was in Japan, actually took a stop at the Pokemon Center. And, like, I was just kind of marveling at the fact that Pokemon is freaking ubiquitous over there. People were like, oh, yeah, Yo-Kai Watch is going to totally kill off Pokemon. It's over. It's over for the Pokemons. Yo-Kai Watch is here. And the general consensus now is that Yo-Kai Watch 3 will sell a ton over there, but that it's just going to go, it's just going to be your typical level 5 thing where it'll be really huge for a couple years and then go away. Where Pokemon has kind of hit that critical mass where it's kind of the perfect nostalgia engine at this point, kind of like Star Wars, in the respect that you've had multiple generations of kids grow up with it now, and they're kind of into it. Like, the way it works is you have your 5-year-olds play the new games, and it's brand new to them, and they're like, wow, that's so cool. And then you have people who, like, maybe played the games 10 years ago come back and go, oh, wow, it's just like I remembered it. But, like, there's some new stuff, too, and this is really cool. And then you just keep doing that over and over and over again. I was going to say that over in Japan, it's kind of, like, become the ambassador for the country, sort of like Studio Ghibli.
Yeah, like, that's
Pikachu's
true.
Pikachu's everywhere.
That's not my Pikachu cat. I'm a fan of OG Fat Pikachu before all the plastic surgery.
Just for an example, like, I'm waiting for a train and I see a poster for a soccer team, like one of the local soccer teams, and one of the promotions is that you can buy a Pikachu with that soccer team's jersey. Like, that's how ubiquitous, like, Pikachu is over there, right?
That's awesome, yeah. I mean, I have to say this makes me feel good about my life choices, even though I'm a little cranky about Pokemon Go, because we talked about in the Retronauts episode about Pokemon, about my Pokemon shame, how the game came out when I was 16, and I wasn't given enough shit in high school for liking anime and video games and stuff, because being a nerd was not cool in the 90s, and I had the most shame about Pokemon, like, oh, I like this thing for kids and no one must know. But then I'm, like, at a bar yesterday, or the day before, and I'm just sitting there typing out some emails or whatever, and then people are next to me playing Pokemon Go and talking about it, like, adults having beer are playing a Pokemon game, and this is the future that I wanted. For sure.
I suppose that's the good thing about smartphone games, is that mobile games are quote-unquote socially acceptable, which makes gaming as a whole just a little more acceptable,
yeah,
to the culture at large. It's not this foreign thing that's going to bite you. It's not this foreign thing that your loser 20-something boyfriend is playing all the time.
But I mean, you're right. I still feel that shame when I take out my 3DS on public transit, like, oh boy, like, everyone's gonna be looking at me because I literally see no one else holding a game system anymore but me.
Yeah, there is,
even in a major city like San Francisco or Berkeley.
Yeah, I mean, I never felt this shame over Pokemon that you did, mostly because
you had fellow Pokemon fans. Were not even any nerds in my school, Kat. It was miserable.
I mean, I was in band. Like, that's where all the nerds went. Weren't you in band?
We didn't have a band program.
That's the secret. You got to join band.
That's true.
Kill the music, you kill the nerds.
All the misfits show up there.
Yeah, pretty much. One thing that kind of makes me, like, think, the one thing that kind of jumped into my head was that this is sort of like Game Freak almost sort of hedging their bets, I suppose, in the respect that, I mean, a lot of the narrative has been around dedicated handhelds kind of being on the decline. And of course, Pokemon has made all of its hay on dedicated handhelds over the years, and Game Freak in particular has been really adamant that they're not going to, like, they don't really want to put it on a console. And maybe that will change if the NX ends up being that hybrid handheld portable console thing that people are talking about, but it sure seems like this is like them sticking their toe into the water with smartphones and going, all right, can this work? Can we make this happen? And can we take this series in new and interesting directions? And this game was not developed by Game Freak. It was developed by Niantic, which previously worked on Inverness. I believe that was the name of the game.
I think it's Ingress.
Ingress.
Yeah.
Inverness. Where did I hear that name? Yeah, Ingress, which was, all of the Ingress fans are super salty about the fact that Pokemon Go is, like, getting all the love in Ingress, and they're like, oh, I've been playing augmented MMOs for a long time now, so I was doing that before it was cool, but so they've kind of grafted Pokemon onto an existing idea, but I think it ends up working really well in the context of the series, because the core of the series has always been trading, battling, meeting other people. Like, it was one of the earliest examples of a truly social game. So this is kind of the natural next step for the series. One thing that I would kind of like to see out of Pokemon Go, if they make a sequel, for example, is a lot more focus on, like, kind of battling and stuff. Like, right now, you can't even challenge somebody to a one-on-one battle.
So. Yeah, that is like, so much of the essential Pokemon-ness is missing. It's really just the monster collecting that is the focus of this version of Pokemon.
Yeah, you can go to a gym, and the gym near my house is the scary abandoned theater that smells like urine, which is just so San Francisco.
Any abandoned building becomes a public urinal in San Francisco after about a day.
Yeah, pretty much. And this place has been abandoned since I got here. So the gym aspect where you can go and battle and everything is pretty cool. So there is that, but I think there needs to be a lot more. And I guess there probably will be more. They'll, like, introduce more Pokemon. They'll, like, add on to the feature set and everything. But if they don't want it to go away really fast, they're going to have to put in some work.
I agree. And I try to be positive about this, but it's been very hard to be the one person or one of two people in a group that is not playing Pokemon Go, because inevitably every conversation will be about Pokemon Go. And if you're not playing it, you're not necessarily super interested. You know, you'll humor people for a while, but it'll be just like, can we talk about something else, please? So I'm trying to stay positive, but I think I need to find other people who aren't playing and have, like, a support group.
Well, it's like
we can get through this.
Well, it's like when Game of Thrones or something is on, everybody is freaking talking about it.
Yeah.
And if you're not watching it, if you have other things to do in your life, then watch the TV show that everybody is watching. Well, you're gonna be bored during a lot of conversations.
But it's also as if they're watching it while they're hanging out with you and looking at a screen and not paying attention to you. There's that element too. Just like, can we just walk? Can we just have a conversation? Can you put the phone away and not look for I don't know, Charmanders or whatever. I know all the Pokemon. I'm not trying to be rude, but it is creating a sort of a disruption in my social space, because admittedly it could be my fault because I'm not playing it. But I do want there to be like some sort of middle ground between Pokemon Go players and people who aren't playing it. Like, let's all get along. Let's make time for each other.
I wonder if this will spur interest in the new game.
Yeah, and I wonder if this will make people less excited about a new game, because Pokemon is so conservative. It's trying to do something completely different, of course, but maybe after getting a taste of Go, people will just not be as interested in traditional Pokemon. I can't make that prediction for sure, but I've never seen more people talk about Pokemon since its initial, like, huge, faddish first run. And it's possibly at even in more intense levels, people are talking about it now than they ever have before.
My feeling is that it will actually spur interest in the new game, because I think a lot of people probably haven't thought about Pokemon in years. And they're like, maybe since they were kids or something. And they go, man, that Pokemon Go was so much fun. Wow, I haven't played Pokemon in so long. Maybe I should pick... Oh, wait, there's a new game coming out this fall. Maybe I'll pick it up. Or
how do you feel about the fact that they're really sticking to the original Pokemon?
As for them sticking with the originals, I mean, it makes sense, right? Because they're going for the broadest possible audience. And to this day, everybody knows the original 150. And so I'd be surprised if they were bringing in, like, God, like, I'm trying to think of a Pokemon, like the snow cone, the snow cones from the fifth generation or something.
Yeah, I think
Aegislash.
Oh, geez. There are so many weird new Pokemon that I'm not comfortable with, but I think arguably the first gen did have the best design, just because they were just starting new with a new idea, and there was no, like, oh, this is too similar to something else. And it was also Ken Sugimori, who was, like, sort of the definitive Pokemon artist, who kind of stopped doing that after Gold and Silver.
Yeah, he was kind of the definitive artist. And the art, the designs, yeah, I mean, when you have like 100 new designs every generation, you're going to have some misses. I mean, heck, the original game had its share of misses. I mean, Mr. Mime is certainly memorable, but mostly memorable for being for how bad it was. And then you go through the years, Love Disc, one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. Gen 4 had its share of awful designs. I mean, but then you also have classics in every generation that end up sticking with people. I'm not sure how I feel about Sun and Moon's, like, have you seen this? The newest Pokemon that got announced is like a ghost type that's wearing a Pikachu sheet.
I actually love that. I'm a huge fan of that idea. Oh, it's so conceptually dark and fun that I like the idea of the ghost that wants to make friends, so it disguises itself as the most popular Pokemon.
Yeah, it's kind of sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a tragic existence.
So maybe there's a little bit of self-awareness on the part of the Pokemon developers with this character.
Yeah.
I mean,
isn't that what Pichu essentially was? Like, if you thought Pikachu was cute, get a load of this.
So yeah, with that, I think Sun and Moon might actually end up being one of the biggest Pokemon games in quite a while, just because the 3DS is now at a point where you can get one at a reasonably low price. And Pokemon Go, I think, is actually going to spur interest. And with that, like, it's going to be the year of Pokemon, you know? Like, people are going to be... I mean, it has been kind of the year of Pokemon. It's the 20th anniversary of Pokemon. Pokemon's original release in Japan. So, they've... It's been quite a thing. Like, it's back. I mean, to an extent, it never left. But it's... Like, the hype engine is back to kind of where it was before. And
yeah.
And it's a pretty remarkable thing after 20 years.
Rightfully enough, people call Nintendo backwards, and they are still backwards in a lot of ways, but it's amazing how quickly they can bounce back with something like this and prove they're relevant again and make us kind of forget about their last few miserable years with the Wii U. So I feel good for Nintendo right now, and I think this will give them more confidence going into the NX and whatever they do next.
Look, I don't want to get into, like, a whole, like, slobbering all over Nintendo podcast or whatever, because God knows we do that enough on the site, but I think Nintendo's kind of secret has always been that they don't necessarily chase trends. They have their own identity. They're not of the moment. They're really good at creating timeless stuff that appeals to people long after they've grown up. And in that respect, that's why we care about Nintendo properties and collect Nintendo systems in a way that we don't necessarily with other publishers. I'm not going to name names. And Pokemon is maybe like one of the peak examples of that. It's just this timeless look and like these creatures that everybody has their favorites. And that will continue to be Nintendo's kind of MO long after they've moved into the mobile space. I just hope they don't cheap out and just throw out faddish mobile games, because that stuff's going to get old really fast.
Yeah, I think they've been incredibly conservative with their approach, and it's paid off. I mean, for as much as Miitomo was a glorified market research survey, it was still something that got people interested, and it was still like one of the few rare mobile things they've ever done. And they didn't follow it up immediately. They didn't like branch off immediately. They let the idea of them being in the mobile space sink in for a while. So they're taking it slow.
Yeah, Miitomo was definitely a game I didn't buy. I was just not that interested in it. But I did get Pokemon Go. And while I'm not as crazy into it as some other people that I know, like Mike, I've been into it. I've been enjoying it. But one game that you have been enjoying, Bob, and I'm sorry to put you through like 20 minutes of Pokemon Go chatter.
No, it's fine.
Like, how much bored you are with that game.
Help me articulate my feelings about it.
Oh, no problem. That's what we do on this podcast.
Therapy.
Let's talk about Monster Hunter Generations.
All right.
Which is the new Monster Hunter that just came out on the Nintendo 3DS. Really kind of flew under the radar in light of the Pokemon Go mania. But you reviewed it. It's on the site. And as usual, you seemed really into it, Bob.
Yes. In fact, I wrote about this in my review. You should read it on usgamer.net. I gave it a 4.5 out of 5 spoilers. I did really like this game. And people, they ask me, because I know a good deal about Monster Hunter. I'm no expert, but people ask me, like, oh, which game should I start with? Well, from my perspective, Monster Hunter is kind of like a sports game in that the new release usually makes everything that came before it irrelevant. Like, if you're playing the new Madden or whatever, you're not going to go back to the previous years, most likely, because why would you? Like, that right. Less people are playing it. It doesn't have all the changes, the new rosters, etc. And that's exactly what Monster Hunter is. It figured out its core idea 12 years ago, I believe, at this point. And it's since then, it's been refining it and making it better with each installment through these tiny little modifications. Big changes are rare, but they still happen. But for the most part, it's kind of building off this kind of antiquated formula that still works really well. And Generations is the best interpretation of Monster Hunter to date, just because that is the just the way the series flows. Like, everyone will naturally be better because that's what they're designed to do.
Well, that's interesting, because in the sports game space, you can point to certain years and go, man, that year was really crap.
Like, right.
But that's not the case with Monster Hunter. Like, they've got the formula down to a science.
That's true. I mean, Monster Hunter makes some strange choices sometimes, like people were not a fan of the underwater battles, which were fine. They weren't the worst things in the world, but they got rid of them because people were like, these are too slow, these are tedious, and we don't like them.
That was on the Wii version, right?
That was on 3 Ultimate, and I believe it was Monster Hunter Tri, which was the Wii one. So
I didn't care for those underwater battles.
Yeah, they were. I liked them in theory, but they were kind of a drag to play out. But they got rid of them, and they've only been making the game more approachable, less tedious, less like gathering is easier. So many things are easier, but that level of challenge and density is still there. And if you're approaching this as a newcomer, you're still going to be baffled. You're still going to be confused. They did not make it that much easier for new people to get into it. And that's why I always say, like, find someone who's played it. Look at guides. I wrote one for US Gamer to get you started. And don't be afraid to experiment, because you're rarely punished for experimenting in Monster Hunter.
The previous Monster Hunter, was it me, or did it feel like it finally kind of got its, kind of got a foothold in the US?
I really think I think 3U was really the first time it did. Maybe 4 built off that a little, but 3U felt like the first time people were actually talking about it. It wasn't this just like, oh, this weird thing from Japan came out here again. And I think since then they've been building off of that momentum, and it will never be like it is in Japan, but I feel like it has a healthy enough user base in America where I can foresee every game coming out here, or at least the improved versions of every game, which is what they've been doing outside of this latest one, which just came out once in Japan instead of having a second version.
So talk about some of the like the big improvements of Monster Hunter Generations. Like, what stands out to you?
Well, the biggest improvement by far, and there aren't a lot of big improvements in this version, but there are these, you can now choose 1 of 4 fighting styles that you can change at any point in the game, and they just allow you to slightly tailor the way you fight. One of them is just standard Monster Hunter. Another one of them allows you to use an extra fighting art, which are these new abilities that basically you can use whenever you charge a meter in battle. They're pretty basic, pretty straightforward. Some are passive, some are active. One fighting style allows you to jump at any time, which you could never do in Monster Hunter, and allows you to mount monsters much more easily. And another fighting style allows you to perform counterattacks, and that's only for expert players who have like mastered all, like, who can like read animations and hitboxes and all that stuff. So there is a way to play for everybody, and frankly, I just kind of stuck with the regular mode because I'm much more comfortable with how I've always been playing Monster Hunter. But for the most part, that is the biggest change to Generations, is that fighting style system.
What's your favorite class? I'm kind of wondering.
I usually stick with the longsword, which is the katana, and it's interesting you called it a class, because I do view the weapons as basically like a class in an RPG, or maybe like a fighting game character, as Brett Elston, a former Capcom guy, used to compare it to, where when you pick a weapon, it's not just like, oh, this thing looks cool. It's like every weapon type has its own animations, has its own combos, has its own special moves, has its own quirks. And getting to understand those quirks and everything that goes into it can take like a dozen hours. So when you figure out a weapon you want to use, you have to spend a lot of time with it to figure out like, oh, this is the one I want to use for this monster. And sometimes the weapon that you like is not the best one to use for a particular hunt. So it helps to learn a few weapons when you're going into the game just to have some options in front of you, you know, many options.
Yeah, when I play Monster Hunter, there's always the weapons that I want to use. Like, it's like, oh, man, well, that's really big and cool and also really slow. Yeah. So this is not exactly, like, really good for a beginner. Oh, well, I can always play as a ranged character. I have no idea what's going on with this bow and arrow.
I still don't really get ranged weapons. And I wrote a guide on all the weapons for 4U, and I had to use ranged weapons. I was like, these are still too much for me to handle on my own. Like, yeah, I mean, there are some weapons that are clearly made for people that are very good at Monster Hunter. It's sort of like Overwatch, where there are certain characters where it's like, you have to be good at Overwatch to use this character effectively. So it is sort of like, the weapons in this game are really just characters of their own. And they're all ridiculous and great, and I'm looking forward to unlocking some of the crazier ones as I play more of the game.
Yeah, the RPG elements are kind of bound up in those weapons, am I right?
Yeah, I mean, your character does not gain levels. You are really leveling up and building new weapons and armor to take on harder challenges. So in essence, like, your weapons and your armor, they're sort of like your party members in a way.
Yeah, they kind of are. With Monster Hunter, obviously Monster Hunter has been quite a thing in Japan for quite a number of years. I witnessed its rise, like, firsthand, and it's a fantastic co-op experience, I think. If you have some friends who are, like, willing to grind through it and everything, it's like the quintessential game that is just meant to kind of kill time, I feel like, but without being too shallow.
I agree, and no matter how you kill that time, you're always getting something out of it. Like, you get so much stuff just from killing a monster that you'll eventually use or sell or whatever, that, like, even if you're just messing around with friends, you're going to get something out of that experience no matter what you do. And that's why I like the game. Like, every second of the game, you're potentially being rewarded for doing something in it, and that's great.
Yeah, Monster, like, maybe the secret thing, or not so secret thing, that ultimately killed the Vita, like, even before it even got out of the gate, was that Nintendo stole Monster Hunter out from under it.
Yeah, I wonder how that happened. I feel like, the 3DS was not a success out of the gate, so I was just curious as to, like, how did they get Monster Hunter just so quickly?
I mean, this is pure speculation, but it could be a combination of Sony wasn't aggressive enough in keeping Capcom in the fold, or it could just be that Capcom was looking at the way the winds were blowing in Japan and went, we're going to put this on the most popular system, or it was the fact that the 3DS came out first.
Yeah. And I do think the Vita had a lot of hubris. Sony had a lot of hubris going into the Vita, even though their game plan was never clear. And I say this as someone who, like, entered the industry full-time just as the Vita was launching, or just as the Vita was being announced, and I saw that in action. I was just like, well, what do you want this thing to do, and how is this different than an iPhone? Like, how will this fit into a post-iPhone world? And I don't think Sony ever figured that out, really.
I think the difference was that, so Monster Hunter started on the PlayStation 2.
Right.
And so it was natural. It was natural for it to go to the PSP.
Yeah.
And because, especially at the time, the DS simply couldn't handle it, right?
Oh, there's no way.
But
yeah,
the DS, I think that it would have gone to the DS if the DS had been more powerful. But at the time, of course, it really couldn't handle something like Monster Hunter. Like, the PSP could barely handle Monster Hunter. Like, the load times were excruciating in those games.
Yeah, you basically had to damage your wrist and fingers irreparably to play it on a PSP.
Yeah, pretty much. Like,
the controls were never suited for a PSP.
No. And for whatever reason, like, they wanted to keep it on console, like, or on handheld exclusively, pretty much. Like, they dabbled in the PS3, like, and they had, like, an MMO, I suppose, kind of. Monster Hunter Online was there, I think, was.
And yeah, I think there was it was, like, for China only. They had an online one. which looked, I mean, the graphics looked amazing as someone who's used to seeing those monsters, you know, on a tiny 3DS screen. And I entered the series by playing the Wii U version of 3 Ultimate, mm-hmm. which people might consider weird, and it essentially was just an upscaled 3DS game on a giant TV, which didn't look great. But I kind of enjoyed having a bigger screen, more space on the screen to just breathe and move. And I've kind of been a little sad that Capcom has not made a Wii U version of anything since 3U.
Yeah, that's too bad. Yeah, they were more active even on the original Wii when they had Tatsunoko versus Capcom and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, not so much anymore. And I've always thought, I know this is like an old discussion, but I've always been a little disappointed that Monster Hunter never made it to, say, like properly made it to the PlayStation 4 or the PlayStation 3. Just because I think that, for me at least, that's the kind of game that I could see me kicking my legs up, putting on like a headset and playing with some friends on like the PS4 or whatever. But I know that obviously they're not going to do that because they're focusing on their domestic audience first, and their domestic audience wants to play it on handheld. Multiplayer on handheld has been the thing for like 10 years over there. So
yeah. And hopefully, if we're all predicting this correctly, the NX will be a handheld TV hybrid. Of course, this could all be false, but that would be great if I could be like, I will play Monster Hunter on my TV and then take it with me. That's exactly what I did with 3U. I would play it on my TV, and then when I would leave the house, I would transfer the data to my 3DS and play it on the 3DS. It was a good setup for me. I had to buy two games for it to happen, but I was fine with that.
Yeah, man.
But this time I won't have to.
That makes... man, if they could actually pull it off, that would make it an even bigger no-brainer.
Yeah.
I mean, being able to knock, being able to hit both Monster Hunter and Pokemon in a really meaningful way that would make them be essentially console games without sacrificing all the advantages of portable. I mean, that would be really awesome. So, yeah, no, I would definitely love to experience Monster Hunter in that way, but... As for Monster Hunter itself, it's definitely easier than ever to get into the series. They've had online on the 3DS for quite a while, if I'm not mistaken.
The weird thing is, and I'm pretty sure I'm right about this, 3U on the 3DS did not have Wi-Fi online play. 4U did. 3U for the Wii U did have online play, so 3U for the 3DS was a weird anomaly where it's like, you should have just put online play into this. I'm almost positive I'm remembering this correctly, so you can yell at me if I'm not, but being online, being able to play online was a huge deal for the series to be popular in the States, because, of course, we are not living in the dense area that a lot of Japanese players are living in. It's a lot harder to find Monster Hunter players, so the fact that you can go on and play with random people and it's usually enjoyable is a huge thing for the series, and I think that's really what has made it pick up in America.
It's not just the density. It's the fact that, I suppose, it's not as much the case right now, but handhelds like the DS and the PSP achieved a kind of ubiquity in Japan, where even like housewives were playing them on the train. And so everybody had these machines, and you would get peer pressured into playing Monster Hunter at work, mm-hmm. right? Like, everybody would go out for some beers, and they would be like, oh, yeah, let's play some Monster Hunter. What? You don't have Monster Hunter? You're an outcast now. Get out of here.
that's what Pokemon Go is like now.
It is kind of, yeah. So, I'm sorry, Bob. I'm sorry. Don't worry. Yeah. It's probably going to last only another week. The internet has the memory of a goldfish.
It's true. I really recommend Generations, though. I feel like there were so much things that were frankly BS in the past games that they've really taken care of. They've really been thoughtful about how can we stop wasting people's time? So, like, things like the essential acts, like gathering items, is now, instead of having to keep hitting the button over the gathering point, you just hold it in, your character gathers all they can, and then it's over. And you end up gathering a lot more as a result. Like, just fixing simple things like that makes everything else flow a lot smoother, because those essential acts are not as tedious as they used to be. And I just feel like everything gets more refined, everything gets simpler. There are still some clumsy menus, some things that aren't very clear that I feel like they will eventually fix, but I've been very happy with the changes they've made. And it is still a series for super hardcore players, don't get me wrong. But anyone can get into this potentially if you are willing to commit to it, like maybe a 6-hour learning curve to really figure everything out, I think, is what really Monster Hunter demands of you.
Yeah, and that's good because Monster Hunter, as you said, has always been a pretty hardcore game. You get into it, like, initially you just want to run in and hack and slash. And outside of certain weapons, that doesn't really work. And then there's even stuff like when you go into the items menu, like...
There are like 500,000 items, yeah.
Yeah, playing a Monster Hunter demo... I demoed Monster Hunter so many times over the years, and it was always kind of the worst in the sense of you'd get into it and you would open this item, like this item pouch, and you'd go, what are all these items for? Because you'd be like, you have to drink this potion to deal with the heat in a particular area.
That's exactly why I wrote in a beginner's item guide for US Gamer. It's on the site under the guides column. It's like, here are like the eight items you'll need, and here's why you'll need them, and here's what situations you'll need them in, because that is not communicated to you. And that's the most important thing to, the first thing to learn. Like, what do I need to bring? What are the essential items I need to bring, period, that will help me? And from there, you can learn how to fight, you can learn how to move, but really, those initial items are some of the most important things you need to learn about.
It took quite a while before it felt really good to hit a monster. Like, it was almost like MMO-ish in the past, in the way that you would swing your weapon. Now it feels like there's a bit more impact to it. Would you agree?
Yeah, and I will not bring up Dark Souls, because there are three people that on the internet that are trying to find out every time I say it and will punish me when I do. But
too late. You already did it.
Yes, I know. I do feel like it's a little more fast-paced. I do feel like it has a similar kind of combat. Of course, Monster Hunter predates Dark Souls, but I feel like they both have the same methodical and impactful combat where you can really feel the impact of hits, and it's very satisfying when you do hit the monster. And I don't think we've explained the basic premise or why this is even interesting, but it's like, why
monsters?
Exactly, but it's like, people could be like, why is it so fun to fight one thing for half an hour? But it's not just you fighting a thing, it's you finding the thing, it's you chasing it when it runs away, and you dealing with the monster plus the environment, which it will also use to its advantage. So there are so many things that go into fighting just one thing, and I feel like only a few games have really taken advantage of that idea, like Shadow of the Colossus. It's still a really fun idea. But Monster Hunter takes it to its logical conclusion by making it feel like a real struggle. You are fighting a creature for sometimes upwards of an hour, and when you finally land that last hit or capture it, it is one of the most satisfying experiences in gaming, and Capcom really knows how to underline your successes to make them feel even better.
Yeah, it really feels like you're fighting this thing that is almost overwhelmingly powerful, and it really highlights how small you feel by comparison. Like, just in the way that you're hitting it, the fact that it can knock you over so easily, like, you have to be really smart in the way that you're avoiding it. You can't just run in and hack and slash. And that's always been one of the more just, you know, fighting, you know, David versus Goliath kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they tried to capture that with Evolve, and they did to an extent, but Evolve had its own issues.
Yeah. But also, Evolve has three monsters, and Monster Hunter has like 40 in every game, which is much different. But it's all like, it's Capcom has never, this is like one of their more conservative games in terms of what they will and won't change, because I feel like whoever developed the core idea really knew what they were doing. And the fact that you still don't see a health bar for the monster is still so important, because it has that, like, that we, it adds so much tension to the fight, and where you're not seeing a health bar, you're not really knowing when the monster will fall. You're looking at behaviors, you're looking at animations, you're looking at how the monster is acting to really know, like, how far you have to go in this fight. And I think that makes you more attentive. Instead of just looking at a bar on the screen, you're watching the creature and its behaviors. And I feel that really brings you into the game a lot more than it could have if it was just a standard, you know, video game setup.
All right, last question. Here's what I'm kind of wondering. Is Monster Hunter declining? And I ask this because maybe it's been a while since Monster Hunter Generations came out in Japan. So it might just be that Monster Hunter hasn't hit, so it's not a big thing right now over there. But it feels a little bit like smartphones are starting to replace dedicated handhelds to a great extent over in Japan, especially among younger audiences. And if that's the case, I wonder how much danger Monster Hunter might be of kind of falling off over there. And if it falls off over there, then, I mean, we're screwed over here because Capcom's not going to...
Yeah.
They're not nimble enough to pivot over to the U.S., so I'm wondering what your thoughts are.
The thing is, like, I think Monster Hunter is such an institution and such a cultural touchstone, even if it's a recent one, that I feel like there will always be a place for it. Just because it is a game you can never successfully translate to a phone. I've heard there are mobile versions, and I'm just like, how? How is this even possible? But I think as I mean, long
there
as there
are... there are mobile MOBAs, for God's sake.
I know, it's like, I can't imagine that, but... I mean, as long as there are portable systems or systems to play them on, I feel that it will always have a place in the hearts of Japanese gamers. And I feel like the biggest Monster Hunter zeitgeist moment was probably, or period, was like 2008 to 2012, maybe, where you could see Monster Hunter's influence in everything, from Dragon Quest to Metal Gear. Everyone was making their Monster Hunter clone. You don't see that as much anymore, which makes me feel like it's not as important. But the fact that they still make these games every 2 or 3 years, and they're still big, and there's still people devoted to playing them, people that have sunk like 300 to 500 hours into every one, I feel like the desire will still be there for as long as there are ways to play these games.
All right, so I guess Monster Hunter is still doing fine in Japan because it sold 2.5 million copies by March 2016 over... Oh, sorry. They sold 1.5 million copies in its first 2 days in Japan.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah, that's actually crazy good for Japan, where yeah. like a few hundred thousand copies is actually a really, really big success.
It's like Star Fox sold 18,000 copies in its first week, and you're like, oh my god.
The sale and the game, as of December 24th, had sold over 3 million copies.
Yeah. And speaking of fan service, they've really learned how to do a great job at fan service. They're doing a lot of Nintendo crossover stuff now. And they probably have always been doing crossovers just with the Japan-only stuff. But now you can dress up your little kitty friends as like Link from the Wind Waker, as Fire Emblem characters
in
the last
game.
Didn't
they have an Amaterasu... crossover, I think.
Yes.
That was a thing. Yeah.
Yes. And
that's actually pretty rad.
Yeah, so like I dressed up my little kitties as Mario and Luigi the last time I played Monster Hunter 4U. So this game is just so much fun. It's whimsical, and it's dipping into Nintendo and Capcom fan service too, which is always nice. So I just feel like if you haven't tried it, if you have the time to learn a Monster Hunter game, I would consider trying it because you might like it a lot. I can't guarantee it, but you might like it a lot.
I know that Monster Hunter 4U certainly looked really great on the Nintendo 3DS. I think that was another thing as well. Like, it was just above and beyond in the graphical department because it gets the budget. So I imagine Monster Hunter Generations must look just as good or better.
Yeah, it's possibly the best looking 3DS game I've played outside of like Bravely Default. They really know how to make these games look good and run extremely well. When there are four characters and a giant monster on the screen, I rarely see any hitches in the graphics at all.
All right. Well, final thoughts on Monster Hunter Generations aside from buy it, or should we just say buy it?
Just buy it and tell me if you're liking it. Tell me I could possibly play with you if you're online, and just hit me up on Twitter. Maybe we can figure something out. I do want to find people to play with. I didn't get a lot of more play in for you after my review, so this time I do want to play a lot more of it with people online, preferably people I know. So if you're playing it, please let me know. Maybe we can find a way to play together.
Well, maybe I'll pick up a copy and bring it to Scotland and try to level up my character a bit. And then
yeah.
Come back and we can go on hunts together. Especially since it's kind of dead right now for new game releases. So it's kind of the perfect time to pick up a copy of Monster Hunter and kind of dive into it ahead of the fall season.
Yeah, you have 2 months before big RPGs start hitting again. So take advantage of it.
Oh, no. What are we going to talk about?
Oh, boy.
Talk about more Monster Hunter.
I guess. I need to get more people on US Gamer to play it. See, this is one of those things that I know Jeremy would love, but I'll have to like strap him down to something and like force his fingers onto the buttons for him to play it.
You think he'd love it?
I think he would. I think he really would. I think he would love Dark Souls too, but again, we need to find a way to make Jeremy play things that he would love.
Yeah, that's kind of tricky sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry,
he's
Jeremy.
He's a busy guy.
Please
he's a busy
don't kill
guy.
Me.
I'm not throwing him under the bus. He's trying to run our website, but
luckily, he doesn't listen to podcasts, so I think
we're
safe.
Oh, God, I said Dark Souls again. No.
Yeah, it's too late.
Damn that Bob Mackey. He's so handsome.
All right. Axe of the Blood God is a US Gamer podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and everywhere else RPGs are sold. Please review and rate us. We would really appreciate it. Subscribe. Tell all your friends. The Blood God will be pleased. You can find me on Twitter at @the_catbot, and you can find Bob on Twitter at @BobServo. Bob, you have anything to promote right now?
Sure. You can always read my stuff on the site, of course. I also write comedy articles for somethingawful.com, and I have the other podcast I do alongside Retronauts, of course, the classic gaming podcast every Monday on usgamer.net and retronauts.com, and I also do the chronological Simpsons podcast, Talking Simpsons, on lasertimepodcast.com. Every episode, we do another episode of The Simpsons in order, and we are at the end of season 3, and things are only getting better, and having so much fun with it.
Yeah, Retronauts recently got recognized by the AV Club
for your
Earthbound
yeah.
episode, so congratulations on that.
And Stuff Magazine named us one of the top podcasts of 2016 alongside of honest-to-God famous people, so I'm incredibly flattered.
Wow, congratulations. Retronauts, yeah. Still doing really well after
I'm
all
coming
these
for
years.
You, Mark Maron. You better watch out.
I mean, I really can't wait for the episode of Retronauts where they finally do a Retronauts on Retronauts, because it's now 10 years old and
we're actually doing that in October, so yes. if you're in Portland, you can come watch it.
I can't wait. It's going to be really great. But we'll see. Anything else to promote? You should go read my Inside California Secret Arcades article, which I wrote a couple weeks ago. And you should go read all of my coverage from Japan. I wrote quite a few articles. You can find links to all of the articles in my wrap-up, which is on the site. And in the meantime, I'm not going to be here next week because I will be traveling. But fear not, the Blood God RPG podcast will be coming to you courtesy of Bob and Nadia.
Yes. I'm going to preemptively crowdsource. If there's anything you want to hear me talk about in this dead summer of no RPGs, please let me know and I'll try to build a show around it. I can always do retro stuff, and I can do, you know, previews of upcoming stuff, but maybe I'll do like a crowd-pleasing episode next time. Things that people want to hear about, like a request.
Let's see. Final Fantasy VI, Chrono Trigger. That's not hard, is it?
No, it's easy.
Final Fantasy, I got to tell you, guaranteed catnip on this podcast. Like, oh, yeah. I think I get at least 1,000 more downloads than I normally do whenever I post a Final Fantasy episode. I could just say Final Fantasy 10 times and maybe like somebody will, maybe the views will just go up. downloads will just go up really high. But in any case, look forward to that next week. And I will be back the week after for more RPG podcast goodness. In the meantime, check us out on US Gamer. Go to all of our social media sites and download our other podcasts from us to you. For Bob Mackey, I've been Kat Bailey. Thanks for listening as always, and until next time, happy adventuring.